Welcome back to episode 102 of the Chaos Ball Podcast. Thanks for tapping in to the Down on the Farm podcast this week. I waited about as long as I could to do this one. Different than what I've done the past couple of years. I did like a minor league recap past couple of years with the team of the season. Really, that was fun, but I'm switching it up because I think it's more important to think about what these prospects might do going into the season. And part of waiting was so some of the new lists and rankings could come out, because rankings change quite a bit as the season goes on, even right at the end of the season. And then sit with the offseason to think about some of these guys and who might impact the major league squad this year and who definitely won't, but still looking forward to following their minor league journey. And then also I thought that they simply wouldn't have some of these guys on the roster or in the organization. I mean, at this point in February, but they do. All of them are still here, which is a little, I mean, honestly, it's I'd say shocking, but also unfortunate, because I think some of these guys should be dealt and should have been potentially and still might be. So that's why I held out. I can't hold out longer. I got to do this now. The MLB pipeline, like top 100, and then they put out their top 30 prospects for each team. That comes in March, and I'm not waiting that long. But I've got a good amount of info to go off of here. Baseball America's list is out. Keith Law's list is out. There was a fun executive poll that includes some farm system talk in it. And I've had an off season just to think about this as well. Still shocked none of these guys have been dealt. I still think obviously some of these guys might be dealt in season. Out of necessity, at the deadline midseason, I'm sure a couple of these guys will be off the squad. But looking at this farm system now, it is robust. It has been rebuilt from the ground up, basically. I think this was like the last ranked farm system in baseball in, 2018? Like, right around when Jerry DePoto decided to do this little rebuild. Not a complete teardown, but a little rebuild with the Cano trade, kind of signaling the end of an era and the start of a new. I think this is like the last ranked farm system in baseball, or is one of the worst in 2018, 2019. And since then, it has been gradually building up. Even with graduating guys like Julio and Cal, and all of their starting pitchers have now graduated. They've just clearly, this is an organizational strength now, is clearly scouting. And it's crazy to look at this farm system, and it's all hitters. It's just such a different vibe completely than the Major League squad right now. The Major League squad is all these young pitchers and some young hitters, but this is a strong position player group. I think it's evident, like I said, they're good at scouting. I think they can scout and draft and sign from the international pool, and then from college and high school in America. I think they're good at scouting. I think they're good at identifying talented players, both sides of the ball. It's pretty clear they're good at developing pitching. I think the verdict's still out on whether they're good at developing hitting. I think, again, they've scouted and gotten good hitters into this organization, but we still haven't really seen them have massive success turning these guys into good hitters at the major league level. Julio, I think there's definitely credit to the org for what they did with him, and even Cal. But it's other guys that just have not panned out that they acquired. I mean, there's like Jarrett Kelenic, Taylor Trammell, and then a couple other guys that I'll talk about this year that's like, can they actually do it? And these next couple of years are going to be the marker. Like, can they develop like Cole Emerson, Cole Young, these middle infielders? Can they develop these guys into solid major league contributors? Because they're clearly talented. They've clearly scouted well. But can they actually develop them into even just what they need to do? And I've talked about this, is have the ability to find maybe diamonds in the rough, or even just scout from the draft and develop just like everyday big leaguers, which they haven't really been able to do. It's like what I hope Ryan Bliss can potentially turn into. I'm skeptical on his ceiling, but if they can turn him into just like a solid big league everyday player, that's a success. They just haven't been able to do that a whole lot with a lot of their younger hitters. And they clearly don't want to push all their financial chips in at the big league level to acquire elite hitters. So this position player group that they have is a pretty consensus, like one of the best groups in ball right now, probably just behind the Red Sox. If you're just looking at position players, farm system on a whole too, it's probably still behind the Red Sox, but I think it's consensus definitely like a top 3 to 5 system in ball, depending on who you ask, and for good reason. And there's definitely some solid pitchers here, but all of their top 100 prospects on most lists, all of them are hitters, which is super interesting. And they span a wide range. They have a interesting array of position players. And we saw this at the start of last season. A lot of them definitely took good leaps forward, good to great leaps forward last season in the minor leagues. And we're now seeing five to six on most top 100 lists, position players for this team. And we may actually start seeing the fruits of this scouting and development, hopefully this season, with a couple of these guys. There's definitely a good amount of these top guys that are not going to see major league time until at least 2026. And I'll still talk about them. But for a guy like, we'll talk about him, Cole Young, we might see him out of pure necessity this season. And the Mariners might have factored that in their offseason plans, which is super interesting. So what I've done is broken this up into prospects that we've already seen, but are likely to see more of next season. A guy like Ryan Bliss, perfect example of this. I have a couple of these guys. I have guys who there's a decent chance that we do see them in 2025 in some capacity. Ones that are unlikely to see at the big league level in 2025, but could absolutely happen. And then we have very unlikely, but non-zero chance we see in 2025. And then there's guys with no chance at all. There's a decent amount of the top of the Mariners' top prospects that's like, yeah, no way that we're going to see these guys, out of whether that be injury or they're in a ball. But they're still worth mentioning. And then I have the bucket of guys to include in a Rafael Devers trade. No, I am kidding. I have been thinking about the Devers trade a lot. Not the Devers trade, just the hypothetical. I don't think the Red Sox are actually going to trade this guy. But they signed Bregman. Devers came out this week and was like, yeah, they asked me to be DH. Not interested. I want to play third base. And hey, welcome to Seattle, Rafael Devers. What would that trade look like? Like, I'm putting aside the fact that I don't think ownership would physically let Jerry Depoto make this trade. Like, there's no way, right? Because of the contract he's owed. If you don't know the Devers contract, it's a lot of money. This would not stop me from trading for Devers. I love Rafael Devers. He's a great hitter. I would love him on the Mariners. I cannot imagine what Jerry Depoto would have to say to get ownership to buy in to a trade. But Red Sox have a track record of trading guys they shouldn't trade for hauls that end up not being amazing for them. What is the Mariners equivalent of the 2019 versions, 2019-2020 versions of Connor Wong, Jeter Downs, and Alex Verdugo from the Dodgers? It'd be like Cole Young. The thing is, the Red Sox are in such a different spot than they were back then. Like, you'd have to include one of the Mariners' big league pitchers in there. You couldn't get away with just prospects. And they won't even want Cole Young. They have too many middle infield prospects and like players right now as it is. I am sidetracked imagining Rafael Devers on the Mariners. It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. There's no way they trade Devers. At least not this season. I think Devers is going to have to deal with it. The one thing I did want to say is like he has every right to be a little mad if they were like, yeah, we're signing. If they didn't tell him prior, like, hey, we're going to go for Bregman, and what this means for you positionally is a little less concrete than us being like, yeah, you're an everyday third baseman, which they've stuck with him for a while, and I think both sides have been obviously wanting to make improvements on the defensive end. He's still not a good third base defender. I think he's much better than he was when he came up, and that it's saying much better than he was when he came up is like he was, oh god, he was a travesty. But now he's closer to league average. I still think he's a below average defensive third baseman. But it's like it's weird for him to say something like that because why is it shocking to him that they still want to try to move him off third base? Like, this is the nature of the sport. He can totally be angry. He has every right to be perturbed by the team asking him to move off third base to maybe DH more, or maybe play first base if they wanted to trade Casas and go down that route. He shouldn't be shocked or surprised by this at all, but I digress. I'm not talking about Devers, even though I just did for a few minutes. We're talking about the Mariners, and let's briefly start with the overall system rankings and vibes of the system as a whole, as I briefly touched on already. But just before I get into the individuals, I did want to, you know, call out a few of these rankings. There's still rankings to come out for sure, but two big ones that have already been released: Baseball America and Keith Law, which I mentioned, I believe, few minutes earlier. Keith Law has the Seattle Mariners as the number one ranked farm system in baseball, which is crazy. Crazy. Baseball America has the Mariners at fifth overall in ball right now. And the list that hasn't come out yet is just MLB Pipeline's top systems. I mentioned their top like 30 lists for each team are not out yet. More of their prospect stuff is coming in March during spring training. Their top 100 list is out individual wise, so that's interesting to look at. But their like top systems list, they don't have one. They have what they do have at MLB.com. They did have the midseason farm system rankings from last year, which I think is interesting. Came out August 15th of last year. And the Mariners came in at ninth there, which is pretty solid for them because the preseason before last season, they were ranked 18th. So they rose nine spots on MLB's list midseason, like they rose on everyone's spots after these position players just started hitting. I'm not going to say out of nowhere, but obviously it was a shock to a few people. But what's more interesting from MLB.com is on January 8th, they published an article. It was a front office executives poll. They asked a bunch of interesting questions, and I think this is so valuable to have on top of like actual prospect evaluators. Obviously, these orgs are all evaluating their own prospects and prospects across the game with their own internal systems, and each team probably has their strengths and weaknesses on how they evaluate guys going forward and stuff like that. And then there are also, like, with Keith Law, Baseball America, like, and, like, prospects, like, grading systems and MLB Pipeline and all the guys who make these lists and grade prospects for a living also have flaws. They're also not perfect, but I think they offer a different perspective, obviously, than MLB executives. So I think this poll is super interesting to supplement other rankings, like from Keith Law and Baseball America, and then looking at these executives. So I have two questions that they answered here of who has the best farm system and then who has the most underrated farm system. And According to the executives polled in this article, the Red Sox got 32% of the vote for who has the best farm system. The Rays got 20%. The Tigers got 12%. The White Sox got 10%. The Dodgers got 8%. The Cubs and Nationals got 6%. The Guardians got 4%. And then there are the Mariners at getting 2% of the vote for who has the best farm system in baseball. So 2% of these executives voted that the Mariners do have the best farm system, which is interesting. And then this one I think is more telling. Who has the most underrated farm system? The Brewers are the top of this poll. There's a lot more teams on this poll. The Brewers are atop this poll with 16%. The Tigers are in second with 12% of the vote. Phillies in third with 10% of this vote. And the Mariners are in fourth with 8% of this vote from MLB executives for who has the most underrated farm system. And then the Cubs and Astros are at 6%, and then a bunch of other teams are at 4%. And then there are a lot of other teams at like 1%. So really interesting. I think consensus across baseball that probably the Red Sox have the best farm system. Keith Law doesn't seem to think so. I think Baseball America has them at 1. These executives, like 1/3 of the executives polled said the Red Sox have the best farm system, which it's hard to ignore because it's different than the Mariners. Like, the Mariners have a lot of these really good guys, but they don't have a superstar in there, really. Not to say that one of their prospects might not blossom into being like an all-star. But the Mariners, I think, have a lot of good prospects. The Red Sox, however, they have a number one prospect in baseball. Maybe not consensus, but Rowan Anthony. And then Christian Campbell broke out last year. They've had Marcelo Meyer in the system for a while. And this is coming. Oh, is this poll before or after the Crochet trade? Because they had Kyle Teal as well, who was one of the top catching prospects in baseball. Let's see, when was that? When was the Garrett Crochet trade? Oh, December, yeah. So this is even after that trade. So they traded 4 prospects for Garrett Crochet and still have a pretty damn good farm system, which is super impressive. But Mariners, clearly, good farm system for Baseball America, Keith Law, and then MLB executives. They definitely have some talented players. But that is the only. Now I'm going to talk about individuals. That was the overarching view of the system. And now let's get into these little buckets. So the prospects we've seen already that I talked about that we'll see again for sure at the big league level unless they're traded this year. I have 3 guys on this list that we have seen. The first guy on this list, denoting that he's probably see the most of him, at least at the start of the year, is Troy Taylor. Troy Taylor in the bullpen. He will be in the bullpen on opening day. Pretty confident in that, barring any injuries. Obviously, that goes without saying for all these guys. He'll be in the bullpen. He was super, super impressive last year in the short amount of time that we saw him. But really impressive. A guy who's been in the system for a little while. It was clear coming up. It was like, okay, this guy's definitely a relief pitcher. He's got an elite fastball in terms of just like pure velocity. He got in his very short sample. I mean, he threw 19 and a third innings. So that's maybe half of what a mainstay middle reliever is going to get in today's game. Maybe at least a little less than half sample size. But he struck out 25 guys in that time. 3.72 ERA, a 1.14 whip. Those are solid numbers, and a lot of this was coming in lower leverage situations earlier on, and then I think they started giving him a little bit more high leverage situations as he progressed, and he clearly had something going on. But 30.9% K rate and a 20, almost 30% whiff rate, too. Average walk rate, did not give up a whole lot of hard contact, sat 97 with his fastball, and has a really good sweeper to go along with it. I think he has a changeup. He barely threw it. Classic just fastball slider guy, or sweeper, I should say. His arm angle plays into his sweeper a lot more. It was really impressive. It was just really impressive to watch. He just looked that he was a big league ready reliever right when he came up, and it was really good to see. I think he's going to just be a mainstay in the bullpen this year, unless he falls off a cliff for whatever reason. I think he's going to be a super valuable middle relief pitcher for the Mariners this season. So we'll see a lot more of him. I don't want to talk about him in depth too much because we'll probably talk about him a little bit more in the team preview. But we'll get to the next player on this list, Ryan Bliss. When I initially wrote this, I was like, Ryan Bliss, obviously we saw he got a cup of coffee, maybe an espresso shot in Major League Baseball last year for the Mariners. Had a really good series against the Marlins, showed some pop, showed that he's very fast and can play defense quite effectively at second base. I wrote down in my little spreadsheet here that, and this was I made the spreadsheet a while ago, if they ended up declining Polanco's option, he is in line to start on opening day. And this is both false and true. Like, they declined Polanco's option. They didn't do anything else to address second base besides, I guess, Donnie Barrels can play second base, but he's probably going to see a lot more first on the short side of a platoon. And then they re-signed Polanco, but to play third base. So Ryan Bliss at second base on opening day is still an option here. I think... Oh man, where is it? Fangraphs, if we just go to roster resource on Fangraphs, I think they have Dylan Moore starting at second base on opening day. Obviously, we have a whole spring training to play through. Yes, they have Dylan Moore starting at second base on opening day. And then I think Ryan Bliss would potentially be on the bench. Now, they don't have Ryan Bliss, roster resource that is, on the bench here. They have him in AAA. And instead, they have Leo Rivas on the bench at the big league level. I think because he's backup shortstop, maybe? I don't know why they'd have Rivas on here over Bliss. I mean, I don't know exactly what goes into these roster resources, but I mean, Ryan Bliss can also play shortstop, which is why I'm intrigued by him, at least a little bit. Got him in the Seawall trade with the D-backs. He was like the main prospect, I guess. I mean, Canzone had already been in the major leagues by then. Ryan Bliss hadn't. I think immediately when they acquired him, I think most places had him as like a 45 future value prospect, which is basically a platoon ceiling on him. Maybe an everyday big league player. I'm not necessarily a Bliss believer, but I think as a floor guy of he can play good defense at shortstop, he can play, or second base, he can play shortstop too, which is super helpful, and play third base, and he's really fast. Like, that's a decent floor for just a guy who might be up and down AAA to the majors. The Mariners have a couple of these guys, like probably too many of them, ones that are a little bit more focused on speed and defense rather than, you know, being a good big league hitter at the plate. But I think Ryan Bliss is at least intriguing in that way. He showed last year, like, there's definitely some pop in there. There is some available in his bat. I'm skeptical is all. But listen, if he provides depth in the middle infield, and this team does need speed. Like, it's, I say they have one too many of these guys, and it's more one too many of these up and down speedy guys. They don't have as much speed on the actual major league roster with, like, they have Victor Robles and Julio, and Luke Raley is fast. You got to give him that. And, like, Dylan Moore is fine, but also aging and is going to be 33 this season. They don't have a whole lot of speed, even on the bench. If you just look at, like, Ryan Bliss on the bench would be really helpful. Because on the bench, you'd have, like, Dominic Canzone, Solano, Mitch Garver. Ugh. Like, Mitch Haniger. Like, it's not, it's a lot of older guys with no speed. So I think he at least fills that void of a guy who can steal bags and is useful off the bench. I don't know how many plate appearances he's going to get, and I'd be worried if he got over like 200 this season in the bigs. I think that would be a little much. But what if he's just good? I mean, he's in his very short sample last season of 71 plate appearances, he did have a 9.3% barrel percentage, which is pretty good. That is above league average. So if he's not a super heavy raw power guy, which he's not, doesn't mean you can't hit the ball hard. Does not mean you can't sock a lot of extra base hits, or you are like Mookie Betts, which is the prime example of a guy who does not have very much raw power, but can hit 35 home runs in a season because it's game power and just the way he hits the ball. I'm not saying Ryan Bliss will be that, but, you know, is what it is. Guy at least is going to play good defense and be fast. So we'll see him plenty, I'm sure, this season, barring any injuries. How much we see him, TBD, especially with how spring training goes. I mean, that spot is up for grabs. That second base, starting second base and depth is up for grabs. Dylan Moore's definitely earned first off the bench, and by virtue of this lineup being a little shitty, starting second base. But Ryan Bliss is right there, and maybe he can be a real useful player. Maybe he'll learn how to play corner outfield too. I think he played some corner outfield in AAA in Tacoma last season in preparation to just kind of be a contributor at the big league level, any spot he can. So I think it's a useful player to have in the org. I'm not here to shit on Ryan Bliss. Moving on to the final guy in this bucket of prospects we've seen but are likely to see more of, Tyler Locklear. We saw him last season, virtually the opposite player to Ryan Bliss, and a guy that clearly has a lot of raw power, but looked so overmatched in Major League Ball last season. He was up by necessity. He was ranked at the end of last season after he kind of had a breakout last year in the minors. I think he was ranked sixth, the Mariners' sixth prospect by MLB.com last season. I think that'll change this year. I think it'll probably be in the back half of the top 10. Like, if I'm just looking at the prospects, like, I think Cole Emerson's above him, Cole Young, Harry Ford, Lázaro Montes, Michael Arroyo, Felton Celestin, and then honestly probably Johnny Farmello, and maybe even the recent draftees, Durangelo and Ryan Sloan, probably ranked above him, I'd imagine, on the prospect list, but he'll probably be like the 10th-ish ranked prospect. Really just raw power. Max EV, like, I think he hit a ball 112 last year at the big league level. First baseman, I think he came up as a third baseman. First baseman, it doesn't look like he's going to stick at third unless, you know, Perry Hill works his little magician fingers on him. I think he's clearly a first baseman DH guy who is going to strike out a lot. Struck out nearly, over 40% of the time? 40.8% of the time last year, but only had 49 plate appearances in the bigs. Just looked overmatched. Like, it just looked like a guy who was not ready to face big league pitching yet, which is fine. Like, he is still young. He's still 24. And he made his way up the AAA, earned it last season. He started in Arkansas and he raked in Arkansas. He had a 930 OPS there with, 8 home runs in 41 games. And then he goes up to the PCL in Tacoma and he's 23. He was 23 in the PCL last year, which is young for AAA. That is young for the level. And he had a flat 801 OPS. Like, that is a fine OPS in a vacuum. In the PCL, though, that is not alarming. It's just he's going to start down there this season. And for me to really think he can, and I think his ceiling might be a guy who strikes out over 30% of the time in the bigs, but has potential to hit 25 home runs in a full season and play first base. Maybe he ends up being a platoon. I don't actually know if he is a platoon guy. I don't know if he's elite against lefties or not. I haven't heard anyone say that. But even like with that ceiling, I'm going to need him to put up a 950, 900, a 900 and above OPS in the PCL. Not only are the ballparks crazy in that league, most of them, even Tacoma, where the environment isn't particularly hitter-friendly, the ballpark is. And then you go to places like you play in Reno and I think Albuquerque, and I think even Sacramento is a good hitter's park. You play in some of the most friendly hitter's parks in the entire country. I need him to mash more than an 800 OPS in AAA to really feel good about him long term. And maybe, I mean, if he can just be a guy who comes up and can be in the bottom of the lineup, play first base, and occasionally hit a home run and just strike out 30% of the time, but no more than that, fine. Fine with it, you know? Like, what was his walk rate in AAA last year? Did they even... Come on. Why do you not have this? Oh, there it is. Okay, I'm stupid. And then just looking at, I was going to say his K percentage and his walk percentage last year in AAA, 23.9% K in AAA. That, listen, it's not amazing, but we can live with it. Like, that translated to a 40.8% in a small sample in the bigs. Get that down to around 30 and, like, hit a few home runs and maybe we're cooking. 12.3% walk rate, too. I'd love to see that jump up. That sounds good. That sounds like a good walk rate. I understand, but it's not. 12.3% in AAA in the PCL, where they were using the, not the automated ball strike system, but the challenge system. Walk rates generally jumped, I think, someone verify this for me, 2 to 3% in the league. I think walks were just generally up in the leagues where this was implemented. So really that would translate closer to a league-ish average walk rate in the bigs, and that's not even factoring in like his whiff, which you're going to whiff a lot more in the big leagues. Like, he was a 6% walk rate in the bigs, but 49 playing appearances is not really enough for me to go off of. Point is, if he can manage to just, I don't know, be more selective about his pitches, it's all about just impacting the baseball for him, I think. I don't think there's ever going to be a Tyler Locklear, a version of him that doesn't strike out a lot. But there could be a version of him that hits for power enough to be okay with the strikeout percentage. Especially if he can walk near league average. Not a terrible player to have. And maybe play third base in a pinch, but it doesn't sound like they're going to want to do that for him. So that's it for this short little bucket of players: Troy Taylor, Ryan Bliss, Tyler Locklear. We'll see you more again. We already saw you briefly, but we'll see you again. Now, on to the next category of decent chance we see these guys in 2025. Number one on this list is Cole Young. Cole Young, MLB's number 49 overall prospect, has been in the system for quite a while. It feels like the elder statesman of this middle infield prospect group, because you have all those high schoolers that were drafted last year. Cole Young always, and has profiled pretty similarly as he's made his way through the minors, a very hit tool first, defensively good shortstop. That's just kind of always what he's been, and that is what he's done in the minors, a guy who does not strike out a lot, who takes a lot of walks, and he's just done that all the way up the minor league so far. Has made it up to Double A, played all of last season in Double A. After 2023, he went from A ball to High A, and then last season, in 124 games, full season, he slashed 271, 369, 390. It's a little low slugging percentage, but that's a 119 WRC plus at the AA level. And he's also 20 years old, which is pretty young for the level. So these are good numbers for AA at all. Those are great numbers for a 20-year-old in AA and one who's playing full-time shortstop. Stole 23 bases, walked 12% of the time, only struck out 15.8% of the time. That is part of what he brings. And then, because the Mariners are so piss poor in the big league middle infield department, he's in this decent chance to see in 2025, not only because he's been in the system now for 3 years. They drafted him out of high school. He's an 18-year-old. The Mariners might just, out of necessity, just need this guy to hit. And I think we're going to see him if he stays healthy no matter what. The one thing I did write down here is he did have like a nagging wrist injury. He was removed from the Arizona Fall League last fall with just a wrist injury. That's like been something that's nagging him, apparently. I haven't seen anything else about that. For a guy, I think he's quite handsy as a hitter, which is just he gets the wrists around really quickly, like just gets to baseballs really well, does not have a long swing, is built to be a contact anti-strikeout guy. So that's something to, I guess, keep an eye on. But I'm excited to see his reps in spring training. I think he'll absolutely start in AAA. I would be surprised if they started him in AA after these numbers he put up, especially because I think Colt Emerson is probably the starting shortstop at Arkansas this season, I'm assuming, to start the year, I assume. So Cole Young, I think, is going to be in AAA. And again, I just talked about the PCL. He's going to be, what is he, still 20? No, he's 21 now, still very young for the level. I'm going to need to see him rake in AAA a little bit. And if he doesn't, he doesn't. But the fact of the matter is, I think he's going to have to come up to the major league level at some point, whether that's to play shortstop or second base. So, what can he provide? I think he's bulked up a little bit power-wise. I mentioned the contacts. His hit tool was his thing that he was drafted off of. But as always, especially drafting high school shortstops, is most of them have a pretty damn good hit tool and can play shortstop well. Like, that is, you know, on base, above average contact, that's a lot of what high school shortstops have to offer. And then a lot of them come into professional ball, they put on a lot of weight, like they mature as individuals. They put on weight to hit for more power, and then sometimes they have to move off shortstop because of that. I've heard nothing about him moving off of shortstop. The only reason he'd play second base in the majors is if J.P. Crawford is playing. And you're not going to start Cole Young over J.P. Crawford unless he's hurt. So I think I know he's put on weight. Like, I think he looks significantly more muscular than when they drafted him. I think that wrist injury last year probably limited his power a decent amount. But I think what we'd expect to see in the big league level this year is just a guy who can get on base and be, can he be the contact low strikeout prince that was promised for this fan base? They've been promising reducing the strikeouts for a couple of years now. Can Cole Young fulfill the prophecy? I'm not sure, but I'm intrigued by Cole Young. It sounds like he can play at least an average shortstop right now, which is cool. Dan Zaborski over at Fangraphs has his Zips model. That is a projection model, and he does it for prospects. And Zips has Cole Young as the 7th overall ranked prospects going into this year. This article just came out the other day, which is crazy. So Zips loves this guy. Like, as a just a potential, like, high average contact hitting solid shortstop who can steal, what, 15 to 20 bags a year. He doesn't have elite speed, but he's not slow. And that's a ceiling. That's, like, for a shortstop, that is a ceiling. That's, like, a 6-WAR ceiling. Like, if he doesn't hit for a lot of power, you're still going to be tremendously valuable if you can get on base and hit for a high average and play a good shortstop. So I'm intrigued by Cole Young. I will definitely see him this year. Oh, and Dan Zimborski himself does prospect rankings. He has him at 76, which is below Colt Emerson, but Zips loves him apparently, which is super interesting. So be on the lookout for that. But I have to move on, Cole Young. I'm sorry. And we'll talk about Logan Evans now, a guy decent chance to see in 2025. You know, I'm going to lump him in with Brandon Garcia as a little pairing here. A lefty, a righty in Logan Evans, and a lefty in Brandon Garcia. Guys, I think we may see in 2025 out of necessity, either in the bullpen or the rotation. These two are down the depth chart starting pitching depth after Emerson Hancock is the main 6th guy. Logan Evans, a guy who broke out last year in the system, They tried him in the bullpen last year because they thought they might need him at the big league level. They did not see the stuff improvement that they wanted to for moving him to the pen, so they moved him back to the starting rotation. He still offers an intriguing depth look. He makes me feel a little bit better about the Mariners pitching depth because I do have my doubts about it going into this season. I don't think they're quite as deep as they should be starting pitching wise, even though they have five great starters at the big league level. But we'll see. We'll see. He didn't turn into a reliever. That doesn't mean that we won't see him in the pen next season. Still could, but we'll see. We'll see. He's got good stuff. Looks like a really good curveball. He's got kind of a funky delivery. Definitely a guy who could bring the funk. I hope we don't see him make a lot of starts for the team because that means injuries have plagued the rotation. But definitely a guy trending upwards. Could absolutely be included in a trade, but I think he's definitely super useful as a depth piece right now. Probably will start again in AA. He was in AA last year. We'll see. And then Brandon Garcia. He was Jamie Moyer, co-pitcher of the farm system last year. With another guy I'll mention later in this podcast. Brandon Garcia is a lefty, and he provides something similar to my knowledge as Logan Evans. He is a stuffy kind of guy. Broke out a little bit last year too. He put up really, really good numbers across two levels of minor league ball last year, across high A and double A. He had a 2.25 ERA, which is really good. And so I think he's in the same bucket as Logan Evans, a guy who could absolutely be in the bullpen this year. I think more so, he's more likely to be in the bullpen than Logan Evans, I think, because he's a lefty and he offers skeptical command, but a really good looking fastball slider combo from the left side. So I think by virtue of him being a lefty and just having those two pitches, I think we're more likely to see him in the bullpen than Logan Evans. If I do say so myself, Logan Evans has like a potentially elite sweeper breaking ball with probably better command than Brandon Garcia. So I think it's more likely we see him in a starting role. He just has more pitches. But Brandon Garcia is a potential, especially they're not super deep lefty wise on the bullpen for the team. Like it's Saucedo and Spire. And then, you know, anything they might be able to pick up from the pile they signed this offseason for AAA. But Brandon Garcia is right there. I think we probably see him debut in the bullpen this season. I'm intrigued by him a lot. Moving on to the next player. You might be familiar with him. It's Sir Harry Ford, MLB's number 65 overall prospect. And you probably know him. He was in the WBC for Great Britain, if you didn't watch the WBC. But Harry Ford, he's been in the system for a while now. I think this will be his fifth year in the system after getting drafted out of high school. And the Mariners are progressing him like a catching prospect. He has spent each year from 2021 to 2024 in the same level that he started in the same year. Did that make sense? That didn't even make sense when I said it. He has not moved up a level during a season is a better way to say that. So he started in the complex, then he was in A ball for a full season, then high A for a full season. And then this past season, as a 21-year-old catcher, he played a full season in double A. So he hasn't jumped the level midseason. It's just pretty typical of a catcher. You progress them slower than most. It takes a while to really develop catchers, which is why it's even more impressive when catchers come up super young and are good. Has been one of the more intriguing prospects in baseball over this time because it's been abundantly clear he is a tremendous athlete. I have compared him numerous times to Mookie Betts, I feel like he could be a great athlete in a lot of different sports. And it's weird because he's never been talked about as like, oh, this guy's a phenomenal catcher. No, he's been talked about as, oh, if he can just improve his catching defense, he's like a 65 graded future value prospect because he has great raw power. He has tremendous speed. His hit tool definitely has some places to go, but it's enough. And if he just becomes a decent catcher behind the plate, like his offensive ceiling is crazy high. He stole 35 bases last year in Double A as a catcher. That's ridiculous. And he's boasted really high walk rates his entire career in the minors. Last year, the K rate jumped up a little bit, but that's to be expected. 22% K in Double A to go along with a 14.1% walk rate. That's not too shabby. Only hit 7 home runs last year, though. So dip in power. A dip in his game power, for sure. He hit 15 in high A the year prior in basically the same amount of play appearances. 119 WRC plus last year in Double A. But really, again, the story with him is less the bat. I think, obviously, the Mariners, I don't think, are concerned too much with the bat. I think the swing and miss is and the dip in power is definitely something to note. But it's really the positional fit for him. It's always been, when is he going to move off catcher? And the Mariners have done a lot, and he's done a lot to work on his catching. He's definitely improved. He's improved a lot defensively. But I still think even then he's got a decent way to go to be considered a good defensive catching prospect. He DH'd a lot last season. He caught 67 games, but he DH'd 40. And then he also got some reps in left field last year. 8 games towards the end of the season in left field. He seems like the perfect type of athlete to go play the corner outfield. He's fast. If he can learn how to track a fly ball well, seems like he's got a decent arm. Again, the speed, the athleticism, it's there for him to be a corner outfielder, and the bat is definitely there for him as well. So the question for him, as it always been this year, how much does he catch? How does he look behind the plate? Can he handle himself behind the plate? I assume as well he'll probably start in Double A again, but I have him in this bucket of decent chance to see in 2025, because what if they are depleted and need a little backup catcher? What if he rakes to start the year, goes up to the PCL, rakes some more, and they say, well, we'll work on your catching, but we might want you to DH and depending on injuries, play some corner outfield for us in the bigs in August. You know, I think that's feasible. If he keeps hitting the way he has in the minors, it's not out of the realm of possibility to see a decent amount of him at the plate for the Mariners. Obviously, catching wise, he's blocked by Cal Raleigh. That's no surprise there. But again, does he actually catch? How much does he catch? That's my big question in 2025. How much does Harry Ford catch? Clearly super talented. I think a prime candidate to trade away to a team maybe that can think they can turn him into a great catcher. But obviously his selling point is hitting. I think he's definitely a prime candidate to be traded, but I'm super intrigued to see how his career ends up what position he ends up playing in the major league. So we'll see. And then I'll end this bucket here of decent chance we see these guys with two infielders, Ben Williamson and Brock Rodin. Every time I say his name, I think I say it a different way every single time. Both of these guys, Ben Williamson, I think, is more in the probably, definitely, third baseman. I think he's going to be in AAA to start this season. Guy who he definitely had a breakout offensively. This season, he was drafted around 2 pick in the 2023 draft out of college. So he is 24 going into this season. Had a decent time of himself. Didn't look amazing in A ball in 2023. But last season, he started in high A in Everett and he raked. Got promoted to Double A, where he hit really well some more to finish the season. The usual stuff came along with the promotion. He struck out almost 7% more in Double A than he did in High A, but still put up a 114 WRC plus over 411 plate appearances. So a huge sample in Double A. He only had 130 plate appearances in High A, 146 WRC plus down there. So yeah, he just came out of the gate just mashing. And he's a really intriguing prospect because round two pick, but also not a super high ranked guy. Even on a Mariners list, he's not super high ranked. And he will be now going into this season after he broke out last year. I have him on this decent chance to see, because if he starts in Double A and makes it his way to Tacoma, what's really blocking him from third base at the big league level for the Mariners? Obviously, trades could happen, but whatever. You got Dylan Moore, Jorge Polanco, Ryan Bliss. Yeah. Like Leo Rivas, Donovan Solano, I guess, can play third base. How many third basemen are blocking him? Like Hogan Windisch is also kind of in this category here. Like we might see him out of positional necessity. Austin Shenton, maybe he's blocking him third base wise. It's ugly, man. Like I think Ben Williamson probably starts in AAA because he plays third base and can play second base too. That's why I have him on here. So super intriguing right-handed bat. I just wanted to mention. And then Brock Rodin. He was a fifth-round pick in 2023. From this draft is looking like the Mariners hit on some just like solid players. Again, my main question is it looks like they've scouted and drafted very well. Can they develop well? Verdict is still out. But Brock Rodin, he also is on this list because he plays second base and he can also play third base. He's a little guy. I think he's like 5'8". And looks just like a guy who can hit more home runs than you'd think. He had 9 home runs in high A and 5 in double A last season. So he had a lot more time in high A. But by the end of it, he had a 154 WRC plus and 310 plate appearances for Everett. Striking out 18% of the time, walking 13%. And then he went to double A and he got kind of demolished in double A. I think he probably starts in double A this season. I have him under Ben Williamson for this reason, because I think he starts in double A, and if he hits really well, he'll end up in triple A. But again, he's on this list because what if he just rakes? And then who's above him at second base? Injuries happen. Who's blocking him? Like all those guys I just mentioned, plus like Cole Young, maybe. So I think probably a little bit more unlikely we see him, but I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility. He's also very fast. He stole 29 bases across both levels last season. So we'll see. We'll see about Brock. And that's it for that bucket. And now we have the unlikely but could see them in 2025 bucket. And then after this, the very unlikely but non-zero chance. And we're at a decent amount of time, so I'm going to run through these and just talk about the most important players on these lists. But I will mention everyone's name, but probably zero in on like their top 100 guys a little bit. But this podcast is going to run a little long. To the bucket of unlikely but could see in the 2025 season, I'm going to give you a couple names here off the bat and then talk about one particular 19-year-old man named Colt. But the other guys who potentially, I think it's pretty unlikely to see these guys, but you never know. Three pitchers. I want to call him Van Scooter so bad, but I'm pretty confident that's not how you say his name. He has been in the system a short time. He was picked in 2022. He's a starter, a southpaw who last year, I talked about him, he made my minor league team of the year last year because he was an absolute workhorse for the Aqua Sox and put up great, great numbers. And this year he had a full year in double A, put up admirable numbers. FIP was a little lower than his ERA. Strikeout numbers took a little bit of a dip here, but I think he'll likely start the season in AA. He's still, I think he'll be 26, which is a fine age for the level, especially as a pitcher out of college. That is not an abnormal age for a AA pitcher. And I'm just going to be on the lookout. He's like a way down the line starter depth, and I don't think he's ready at all for Major League Baseball, but that's why he's on the unlikely list here of guys we could see. The next guy on this list is Jimmy Joyce. Now, Jimmy Joyce is a relief pitcher. He's been in the system for, I think this will be year four. Yeah, 2021. What does this say? 16th round pick out of Hofstra. And just looking at his raw stats, from last year. It, like, on the page, it's like, oh, that's not good. That's not a good pitcher. 5.49 ERA in Double A. But so since he got drafted in 2021, he started in the complex, started immediately in High A, got demoted the next year to Low A, and he's been in Low A and then steadily improving and getting up, and he finally made it to Double A in 2023. And he put up pretty solid numbers across the board in 2023 as a starting pitcher. And then this past season at the start of the year, they started him off in Double A as a starting pitcher. Did not have a good start. Did not have a fun time starting games for the Arkansas Travs. And this is why just looking at the raw stats does not tell the whole story. Because this guy, they moved him to the pen, and he looked quite comfortable in the pen. He has a really funky, like, sidearm delivery that I think works really well with his best pitch, which is a changeup. Which is, I think, why his changeup works so well. If you have a Twitter account, go to Mariners Minors, the Twitter account. They have a bunch of good videos from late in the season of Jimmy Joyce pitching. Go watch it. It's fun. Looks like a dude with, like, his changeup looks phenomenal. I think it works really well off his slider. I don't know what his fastball grades out at, but he had a really, really great end to the season in the Arkansas Travs pen. And if there's any, like, I've talked about this org's ability to just churn out decent bullpen arms from the system. That's why he's unlikely, because he mightily struggled, but then came on at the end of the year, still in Double A. I'm assuming he'll start in Double A next season. I don't know. Maybe they'll start him out of the pen. But if there's going to be a potential guy to look out for to make a relief pitching jump from Double A to even bounce through AAA in the majors quickly if the Mariners need bullpen arms out of necessity, look out for Jimmy Joyce. Had a really, really good end of the season and just looks like a relief pitcher. Go find a video of him. Last pitcher on here, Michael Morales. Now, he was the Jamie Moyer co-pitcher of the farm system along with Brandon Garcia, who I mentioned earlier. Michael Morales, also drafted in 2021, but in round 3 out of high school. Really interesting arm they got out of high school, and has had a fairly rocky start to his professional career, or did. And then this past season, phenomenal year. Great, great pitching for the Aqua Sox. Made 15 starts at a 2.36 ERA. Got bumped up to Double A. Finished the year with 12 starts for the Travs. His strikeout numbers actually went up when he moved up a level. 3.88 ERA. I think he started peppering the zone more. He walked less guys. He struck out more guys. But he gave up a dramatic amount of home runs in 65 innings. But really interesting arm. One to watch. Has a decent three-pitch mix. And I think I wanted to mention him because co-pitcher of the farm system. He'll likely start probably in Double-A. But another down-the-line depth guy that could make it up to AAA this season. So very interesting, Michael Morales. And now I'll really talk about the cream of the crop of this group of players, the unlikely, but maybe in 2025, Colt Emerson. Colt Emerson, you know Colt Emerson. One of the first pick of that Mariners 2023 draft where they took three high school position players in, like, within 10 picks of each other. And God, he hit the ground running in 2023. I'm sure you all have been, if you follow the Mariners at all, you've been following Colt Emerson. He just came out and raked in the complex, raked in A-ball immediately for Modesto, and helped them win their championship in 2023 as an 18-year-old. And then in 2024, this past year, he started out the season raking again for Modesto, but his season was derailed by injuries. He was injured in April for a couple weeks with an oblique strain, I believe, and then he came back finally, and shortly after he came back, he fractured his left foot. So his start of the season started out, like, great when he was on the field, but he just wasn't on the field a whole lot. But then once he finally came back, it was pretty clear this guy was too good for A-ball. So they bumped him up pretty quickly to high A, Everett. And his numbers took like a little bit of a dip as expected. But I think there were plenty of things to take from that season. He improved, like he kind of did the thing that a lot of good players in the minor leagues do. They get bumped up a rung on the minor league ladder. They immediately, sometimes their numbers will take a dip as they adjust to the new level. And then as the season goes on, they will start to figure it out. And he absolutely did that. And it was really good to see from Colt. And he is our highest ranked prospect right now. Let's see, where is he at? Last season, before 2024 happened, he was the 52nd overall prospect according to Baseball America in the sport. And now, according to them, he's number 16 on that list. According to Major League Baseball, MLB Pipeline, he was 87th ranked going into last year, and now he is 20th ranked. And Baseball Prospectus, he was 50th, which was his highest ranking going into last season, and now he's 32nd on Baseball Prospectus's list. So definitely the Mariners' number one prospect right now. Looks like a guy who can be an everyday shortstop at the big league level. Like, that is what he profiles at. I think there's more power in his frame and just in his projections than like Cole Young, which is why Cole Young potentially makes more sense as a potential like contact first shortstop who still looks like he's going to play shortstop. Colt Emerson, I think if he keeps adding muscle, absolutely can see him come up as a third baseman who just rakes. But it would be awesome if he stayed at shortstop. His raw power grades out really well for like a high school shortstop. I've read about his quick hands. I think Keith Laws talked about it. He's very handsy. He's got very quick hands, but a good frame, like for projectable power late in his career or as his career progresses. So he also went to the fall league. I think he was the youngest player in the fall league at 19. And he started out raking in the fall league, and then he strained his hamstring and had to get pulled from the fall league. So his 2024 was riddled with injuries. I mean, but he still ended up with 70 games at the minor league level last year, which is less than you'd want to see. Obviously, that was because of injuries. But even despite missing that time and missing fall league time with injury, he's still that highly ranked on prospect lists. So it's pretty clear that this dude is good. Colt Emerson is good. And so I put him on the unlikely to see, because it's not super crazy to imagine him making his debut in 2025. It's a little crazy to imagine that. But like, September rolls around and who knows what is going to happen by then. But yeah, I don't know. What if J.P. Crawford is hurt and what if everyone's hurt and Colt is just, he's getting promoted to Arkansas and he has a 950 OPS in August in Arkansas and the Mariners are like, you know what? Fuck it. Bring him up. I don't think it's going to happen, but that's why I said unlikely. I think if he played, like if he didn't get hurt last year and played a full year, I think he could have made it up to AA at the end of last season. I think they're going to be pretty aggressive with him because I think they think that he can handle it. He's 19-year-old shortstop, so future is quite bright with him. But I wanted to obviously talk about him a little bit more in depth than those other guys. And then to round out this list, we move on to the final little bucket of players here. The very unlikely but non-zero chance. So I'm thinking like less than 5% chance for these guys that we see them in the major leagues in 2025. I just don't see that happening at all. But I wanted to mention these guys because they'll definitely hopefully be risers in the minor league system. So worth looking out for. And we'll do this the same as last time. I'll run through three names really quick. And then I have two other guys that are worth noting a little bit more because they're more highly touted prospects. But first guy, pitcher, name, Ashton Izzy. I believe is how you say that. Izzi. That seems like a simple name to say. I hope that's how you say it. Mariners took him in round 4 of the 2022 draft out of high school pitcher. Just pitched in the complex league a little bit last season. And then this year, full season for Modesto, threw 110 2/3 innings, started 26 games, 2.85 ERA, really good ERA, 4.56 FIP though, pretty high. I find him to be a particularly interesting pitcher in the brief, highlight little clips that I've watched of him. I just wanted to call this out because that was a very good season in A-ball. He's 20. He's 21, so still young for that level even, which is very encouraging. Obviously, I don't think I don't think any chance we see him in 2025, but another one I wanted to throw in here because I find him interesting. That's it for Ashton Izzi. Ty Pete, next on this list. Ty Pete, one of the other high school shortstops, along with Colt Emerson, taken in that 2023 draft. I think he was the competitive balance pick at the end of that draft from the Mariners out of high school. Super interesting profile for this guy because right when he was drafted, I was like, oh my God, his swing, just taking BP is gorgeous. I think there is tantalizing raw power for him to tap into, and really good speed, really interesting power speed combo. Don't know if he's going to stick at shortstop, who knows. But he spent the entire season in A-ball last year, played a full season, 115 games, hit 7 home runs, 71 RBIs, 45 stolen bases. Fairly average numbers when you look at his K to walk ratio. He struck out a lot, but he is 19 years old. That was 18, his age 18 season last year. So he's 19 coming into this season. I think he'll probably stick in A-ball to start the year. Probably see some time in Everett, I would imagine. And he started taking reps late last season in the corners in left field. I don't know about right field. I know he tried to play a little bit in center too, so he got some reps in the outfield last year. I think there's likelihood that he moves off of shortstop. Some of it was because Colt Emerson was playing shortstop in A-ball. So, and they weren't going to start Pete over him at shortstop. So part of it was necessity. Part of it is I think there's just less confidence that Pete sticks at shortstop versus Colt Emerson sticking at shortstop, for example. But Ty Pete, super interesting player. Doubt we see him. Non-zero chance, because what if he just, is the greatest prospect we've ever seen in 2025? Probably not, but worth mentioning. Worth mentioning for sure. And this guy's probably the more likely than those last two guys to see, but still super probably unlikely. Jared Sundstrom, he was a round 10 pick in 2023, and he spent the entirety of the 2024 season in Everett. And he is a corner outfielder who profiles as just a really solid all-around corner outfielder. Let's see, what did he do last year? 112 games, 13 home runs, 26 stolen bases. Struck out, walked a decent amount, struck out 23% of the time, which is okay. In high A, I'd like to see that number a little bit down, but 132 WRC plus over a full season of work for Everett is interesting. And as a guy in the corner outfield, you're looking for a guy to be potentially a little bit more powerful, maybe strike out a little bit more, but have some pop there. He's a right-handed bat. He won't be an MLB next season. There's 1% chance. But I think he'll definitely see some time in AA. This will be his age 24 season, and I think he's a name you should know as a potential, up and down guy for the corner outfield for the Mariners' future. But Jared Sundstrom, and then the other two guys on this list, Lázaro Montes and Michael Arroyo, two past international signings for the Mariners, both ranked in the top 100 on MLB Pipeline's updated list. And let's start with Lázaro, MLB's number 42 overall prospect. That's above Cole Young, below Colt Emerson, but that would be the Mariners' second highest ranking, according to MLB.com. Where else is he ranked? He's ranked... Where are you rankings? 97th on Baseball America's and 53rd on Baseball Prospectus's. I forgot where he was ranked on Keith Law's top 100, but he's in there. I know he's in there. He feels like a polarizing... He's one of those polarizing prospects because he's just... First of all, he's huge. He's massive. He's listed 6'3", 210 on Baseball Reference, and he could honestly be bigger than that. He's 20 years old right now, so last season was his age 19 season. The Mariners signed him in 2022 out of Cuba, and he profiles as... A lot of people have said Yordan Alvarez, and I have constantly said that is just unfair to comp literally any young player to Yordan. Like, that is ridiculous. But there's merit to the comp because you see why people comp him to that, because it just looks like from the left side of the plate, just huge power. And all he's done at all levels is rake. That's all he's done. Every level he's been at. He made it up to Everett last season after cooking at Modesto. The only other thing I wanted to say about, I've said about the Yordan comp, is Yordan did not strike out this much in the minors. Like, he's Lazaro's run last year, 19% in A ball, almost 30% in high A. Now that went down towards the end of the season, but still good walk numbers too, because pitchers are pitching around him rather than give up a 450-foot dong shot. But super interesting guy. Profiles as Yordan corner outfield, maybe not a good defender at all, a guy who would bop between corner outfield and DH, but it's a pure upside ranking when you rank him really high. Like, MLB has him high, Baseball America has him lower. I've heard cases for both. I think some people rank ceilings higher than like floors, you know, and Lazaro's ceiling is insanely high. He profiles as a potential, you know, 40 home run a year corner outfielder, like just pure slugger. But then his floor feels like, you know, a guy who can't ever strike out less than 35% in Major League Baseball. So high variance for him for sure, but it's hard not to get excited when you watch him swing the baseball bat. And so he's on this list because this is going to be his age 20 season. He's only been in professional baseball for 3 years now. 3 years now. And so, like, come on, there's no way. I mean, unless he starts probably in Everett again. So he made it up to Everett last season and immediately looked overmatched. But then his last month of the season, he raked. He did that thing where he figured out the level a little bit as the season went on. So I think he stays there to start this year. And if he rakes again, he'll make it up to Double A. I mean, what if he's OPSing 1,000 at Arkansas in July, and the Mariners at the major league level are still trotting out, I don't know, whoever. At DH. I mean, is there a chance? No, I think he would get up and I think he'd strike out half of the time, but he'd hit one home run and hit like break the Hit It Here Cafe glass. And everyone would be like, okay, maybe keep him up. He's an automatic strikeout every second at bat, but he might hit a ball 500 feet. You know, it's interesting. And he's got it's hard not to just get too excited about him, but I want to mention him. Obviously, he's one of their best prospects, but super high variance for sure from this fella. Now, the next guy, Michael Arroyo, probably the biggest riser in the Mariners system this season, or between this season and last season. He's been around for a little while. He was signed in the same class as Lazaro out of Colombia in 2022, part of that international signing class. And he, I think I talked about him last season as a guy who's probably on that next 100 prospect lists. He had not ever been on the top 100 prior to this season, but he had consistently looked like a really interesting middle infielder who looks like he's going to stick at second base. One who has some swing and miss in there, not as much as like Lazaro, but has a lot of power for his size. He has a surprising amount of, and I don't think I'd call it game power, but or raw power, but it's game power because he, let's see, what is he listed at? 5'8", 160. That is not big at all. But he hit 23 home runs across A ball and high A last year. 148 WRC plus across both those levels. And he played 60 games at each level last season. Struck out a good amount in Everett, but that came with a good amount of power and speed. He stole 10 bags for them last season. So a 23 home run, 18 stolen base minor league season across Modesto and Everett last season. That is great. And did I mention, again, same age as Lazaro. He was 19 last year. So super young for the level, especially to be putting up those kind of power speed numbers. Really interesting prospect. He had always hit well. He hit well immediately in the Dominican Summer League. He hit well immediately in Modesto. It was like modest A-ball numbers, but he was 18. And then he just absolutely cooked last year, and now he is on prospect lists and getting a lot more national attention. He's on Baseball America's number 77. He cracked both Prospectus and MLB's at 98 or 95 and 98 respectively. Super interesting, really interesting player. I think one, it's weird to say that could just be dangled in a trade, but with the strides he's made, his value has gone up tremendously, and he's just another international signing position player asset in the lower minors that this team has at their disposal to either develop into a potential good hitter for 2027 or dangle in a trade. Because again, I put this on very unlikely but non-zero chance. Doubt it, but still. Oh, and I didn't even mention, these guys won awards last season. Lazaro won the Ken Griffey Jr. Hitter of the Year Award in the minors, and Michael Arroyo won the Edgar Dominate the Zone Tournament Hitter Award for the Mariners as well. And he led the entire farm system across all levels in WRC Plus among qualified hitters. So he was literally the Mariners' best hitter last season in all levels of the minors, which is pretty cool by WRC Plus. And then you know who I'm going to throw in right at the end here on this list, the very unlikely but non-zero chance? Felman Celestin. He probably is at a point 0.0001% chance to see Major League ball next year because he has only ever hit in the Complex League as an 18-year-old. But boy, did he rake in the Complex League. But he also got surgery on his wrist. Yes, wrist surgery last season. I think it was in, what is this date? Yeah, August. So obviously, I think he's entering this season like fine. But he put up tremendous numbers in his short stint in the Complex League last year as an 18-year-old. Signed him in 2023 out of the Dominican. He's 19 right now. This will be his age 19 season. He's huge. Like he's listed 6'1". I think he's likely 6'2". And looks like frame-wise, could put on a lot of muscle. He's already 175. I bet he could put on a little bit more than that. He is just a really physical, like, pure switch hitter as well. I don't know if there's a definite dominant side of the plate for him right now. He looks like he can handle himself on both sides. Got a beautiful swing. He's the classic international signing that looks like a potential five-tool shortstop, which almost never pans out to be that. But the fact that he's a switch hitter and he raked in the complex league immediately is good early signs. Is very good early signs. So definitely one to remember for like 2028, maybe. And that's it for really the guys I really wanted to focus on. And then the guys I got no chance seeing next season, you know who's not going to impact the Major League Baseball Mariners next season? Danny Holson or DJ Peterson or Alex Jackson. Sorry for that. No, realistically, Johnny Farmello, the other high schooler that they picked in 2023, he tore his ACL midseason last year, so obviously he's not going to see any major league time, let alone, you know, he's going to have probably reduced minor league reps next season. And then, like, Jeter Martinez is a super interesting name. Him and Dawell Joseph, both really young international signings that are obviously, I think they're going to be in the complex next year and maybe A-ball. Both super interesting, but there's no chance. They're too young, too far. And then the guys they just picked, so like their top picks, Gerangelo and Ryan Sloan, the two pitchers, their top picks of last year's draft. Really interested to see what they do in professional baseball this year, but obviously there's no chance they would make it to the major leagues. I just wanted to mention those guys' names while I was here. But that's it for this podcast. Long one, a lot of minor league names to think about. I think Cole Young is the likeliest top prospect we see, and that's not like some crazy prediction. I think there's a consensus that he will probably see a decent amount of time in the PCL this season, barring any injuries. With how weak and non-deep the position player infield group is for the Mariners at the major league level, not surprising that they might need Cole Young to be a decent, productive young hitter when he comes up to the major leagues, and I'm looking forward to it. It's kind of, him and Harry Ford are leading the line of this new player development crop, because we've seen the pitchers from the kind of rebuild, retool that this org has done, but now we're chock full of these young hitters, and Cole Young is likely the first one to kind of make his debut and make his mark and maybe, you know, keep Jerry DePoto's job for him. He might be tasked with that. So that's a big ask for Cole Young, but might be good enough to do it. We'll see. But thank you for listening. I'm ending it here. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. If you're listening to the end, I appreciate you, and I hope you have a great rest of your week as spring training begins and we're really getting into it. Baseball is right around the corner. Spring training is beginning and opening day is almost a month away. We're a month and change right now away from the season starting, which is absurd to think about. I'm excited despite the lack of off-season stuff for this team. I'm still excited, and I think it's really interesting to enter the season with one of the best farm systems in baseball, and I'm intrigued to see what these guys do this year. So, again, thanks for listening. Go Mariners Miners. Go follow Mariners Miners on Twitter for the best updates throughout the season. And, of course, I'll be back next time talking about the Major League Ball Club. So, see you later.